If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. My name is Dominic Swentoski. I'm the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. All right, welcome back, friends. This is season 11 of the Troutbitten Podcast. We're back to the full crew format with a different topic each week. And this spring, we have some great conversations lined up. Hey, it's good to be back. I know the guys here with me feel the same way, and I'll introduce them in a moment. This was our longest layover between podcast seasons. It's been about 6 weeks since Austin and I wrapped up season 10. Then we hosted our first live stream podcast on YouTube, where we talked about Deli's Super Paws. That was a lot of fun. And thanks to everyone out there who joined us live. That was cool. Then Austin and I traveled to Patagonia. That took a couple of weeks. And since we returned, we've been taking care of a few other irons that were in the fire, and now we're back. This evening, we're here to talk about the stages of an angler. This will be kind of a free-form conversation around that topic. So I can't tell you how many times I've heard people repeat these supposed stages of an angler. First, you want to catch a fish. Then you want to catch a bunch of fish. Then you want to catch a big fish. Then you want to catch the toughest fish. And then you just want to catch a fish again. That's a clever way to look at a life on the water. But is it really true? I don't know, but we're here to talk about it. We'll also expand into what we think are some other stages that anglers might go through. And I'd like to talk about the beginning stage, why it's so hard at first, how anglers kind of get held back, and how, sadly, the majority of fishermen probably never get a whole lot further than those early stages. So there's lots to think about, plenty to talk about tonight, and we'll get to all of that in a moment. I want to say thank you to all of our sponsors this season. We have a few new friends as the partnerships with some of our favorite companies just keep growing. Remember, all of this happens because you, the listener, supports the Troutbitten Project and you support these sponsors. So thank you. But this podcast also works because of the guys right here in front of me. These are my best fishing buddies. These are the guys that I've known for a long time. I've learned from them and exchanged ideas. Each of these friends is also part of the Troutbitten business in a few different ways. So let me start with Austin Dando. Young love with a new haircut. How you doing?
Hey now.
Look sharp.
Doing great. You with the new beard look pretty good.
Beardy. Old beardy right
Already
here.
Giving compliments.
New glasses too. I got new glasses that look like yours.
Yep. You're getting there. You almost got the look.
How long's the beard? What do you trim it at?
Oh, that's different for every face.
Is it?
What do I trim it at?
Yeah, what do you trim it at?
Depends on the season.
Right? In the wintertime, I keep it a little longer. Right now, I trim it down to like a 4.
Okay.
On my Phillips shaver, if anyone else out there is interested.
Get a Phillips sponsor. Something more important, though, Austin, will you tell us about the Troutbitten New Trail beer?
Absolutely.
You've been working on that.
Yeah, so we We've just gotten on the brew schedule with New Trail, our friends over there, and we are planning to do a collaboration beer with them at the end of May, maybe beginning of June. And the idea is to have a collaborative brew day where all the guys, Grobe, if you want to fly in,
yeah,
Grobe, all of us on the podcast, get to go over to the brewery and participate in kind of creating a recipe that we all can get behind and enjoy, and then partake in the actual the brewing process. So adding the grains, adding hops, just kind of getting to enjoy time together there and maybe getting some footage. Hmm. And then once that beer is brewed, we'd like to have sort of an event, maybe a tasting event, or you know, a live podcast tasting, something to go along with that release that we can talk about more as those plans get solidified. But we're definitely pretty excited to work with them in that.
Do we have a name yet?
I don't think we have a name chosen yet, but I think the it's going to be a hazy IPA, but we're going to call it a Hey Now IPA.
We might. No,
Hey Now IPA. I like that.
Yeah. Right?
Yep. The high holer. High holler hazy.
The sweetheart. Yeah, comment your name suggestions.
Yep. Seriously. Got a couple other suggestions that came in. We like it. Whatever you think, let us know.
My friend Rye thinks it should be called Broken Reels.
Ooh.
Which is pretty bad. Good, isn't it?
Ooh, that's not bad. Good. Not bad.
Yeah. Old Rye Carm.
Well, I said make it as close to Broken Heels as possible. Maybe just a little bit more citrusy. Ready? I'm going to crack my Broken Heels right now. Hey, oh, that got splashed.
Got splashed on that one. I shook that one up.
No, you didn't. But anyway, that's pretty neat because you've been brewing beer for a long time, right? And for you to kind of head up something with really one of the fastest growing brewers on the East Coast.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Good guys. And Della, you were fishing with Anthony a couple days ago, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago now at this point, yeah.
And I passed you guys, and I knew it was you. I thought you were guiding or something. You would think that I would know that, but so I passed you up. And then I'm like, I also just didn't want to talk to anybody. And I went up above, went fishing for a little while, and when I came back, I saw two orange cans on my rear bumper there as I was walking back. And I knew what those were. And Anthony left a couple broken heels on my tailgate. I thought that was pretty cool. How was fishing that day?
It was good. I remember texting you, and you said that you were fishing 7X.
I was.
Size 18 and 20 flies.
That's right.
And we were fishing 3X with, like, giant glow ball eggs on, and they were hammering them, and we did pretty well. So it goes to show you can catch them on however you want.
That's right. You do what you want, you do it well, and you probably catch fish. Although, and we talked about this, Bill, you covered, like, 5 miles of water.
We did. Right. We parked it. Like, it was raining, and I knew there wasn't going to be anybody, so we just cherry-picked for literally, I think, about 2 miles.
So if you really want to catch the selective ones, maybe you would have had to go to 7X.
We might have, yeah, if we cared enough.
Right, if we cared enough to catch the smart ones. That's what I was doing.
We had to move fast. We had to move fast and get back to the car to have another beer.
That's right. I bet all those New Trail guys just travel with beer in their car and in their back pockets and their vests, right? Good friends to have.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it kind of is. Deli, I have a serious question for you too. When are you buying the Trout Bitten Lodge and taking that over?
Hey, now.
I have a camp and you are all invited and never come over, so if I bought another place.
You know why I'm not over there, right? You know why I've never slept over.
Why is that?
Well, you snakes. That's right, snakes. Right after you got it, you said, well, I think I got rid of all the snakes. That sentence right there, that shut me down for eternity. I'm never sleeping over.
I've only ever found one snake skin in
there.
Camp.
There you go.
Just one.
Only ever found one. Can't do it, bud. Can't do it. No, we're gonna need a bigger place.
Bigger place, okay.
All right.
Your title can be Lodge Owner, Trout Bitten Lodge Owner.
There you go. Trout Bitten Lodge
That's
Owner.
That's pretty good.
Right?
Yeah.
Matt.
Maybe you want to retire.
Matt Grobe and I are going to build our own pair of waders, right?
There you go. A seamless tube. You just stepped
tube
into it.
Tube sock. Yeah. Just a tube sock.
I'll do whatever it takes.
Start our own wader company. Do it right.
Leaky Wader Lager.
There you go. That's the next. Well, we don't
just
want
a skunky shitty beer.
They made that. It was called Loyal Hand Lager.
I know.
Funny. Throwing them under the bus.
That's my hometown, baby.
Grobe, you saving up your grievances for the end of this season? Annual grievance coming up in like 8 episodes.
I'm just going to focus on apparel and boots and waders.
Yeah.
That's been failing me lately.
All right, so Josh is sick and Trevor is sick, and that's because those guys hang out together too much, you know?
No, Trevor's saving lives.
Oh, no, that's true. That's true. Trevor's saving other sick people.
Yeah.
Right? He's not sick. He's just going to be sick. Yeah, so the other guys would probably join us, you know, next week or something. But I'm going back through. Well, I've been listening to all of the season one podcasts because I'm taking all the podcasts that exist, like the whole archives. It's 110 podcasts deep now. And I'm putting them all on YouTube. So they're going to remain everywhere else where you just, you know, like on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever else you listen. But now they'll be on YouTube because a lot of people have been asking me to put them on YouTube. Why aren't they on YouTube? So now they're going
to
be.
So do I have to like be mindful of my gestures and stuff now? Like,
no. So that's a good question because I'm saying all the old podcasts are just going to be audio with a static image on YouTube. Right? And you know what I'm saying.
Image. I got you.
Yep. A photo, bud.
You know, sometimes I'm gesturing.
Oh, show me.
Yeah. Can you make it a Giphy instead of it?
You get in trouble.
I could, Bill. But that just complicates life.
Yeah. WWE GIF.
So that's, I will say, it's kind of neat to go back.
Can I still image be this?
Yep. Okay. It's kind of neat to go back and listen to all of these early podcasts. We got a lot better. A lot better at this.
Even the audio got better.
Oh, the audio got way better. We've done it 110 times, and if you do something that often, you would think you'd get better at it. Think about how many times that, like, think about the first time you had sex, Grobe. You know, you're a lot better now.
Very true. Very true.
Right? Got a lot better at it. We all got a lot better at things.
I was thinking the first time I tied a Trout-Bitten Superfly, but sex is good too, man.
Yeah, right. Everything gets better when you do it 100-plus times. So it is neat to hear. I'll be honest, I'm not listening to every minute of them. I would like to. I'd like to have the time to go back and listen to every minute and clip some of the best stuff and just have like a really long outtake, like an hour-long outtake of like the funniest.
That'd be cool.
Stuff from 110 episodes. Wouldn't that be cool? That'd be like the season finale of Seinfeld.
Yes.
Yeah, just 2 hours long.
Do it at
long.
The end of the year.
You know?
Except yeah, not just do so it, much just of a letdown.
A recap of the season so you're not having to go through all of them.
All right, Matt, that's your job. Okay.
Oh, shit.
You should,
you know, with all that free time.
You should hire.
Yeah, with all that free
You should
time.
Hire some unpaid intern from State College that wants like audio credit or experience and be like, hey, here's your project.
Credit internship.
Yeah.
What if they don't know what's funny, though?
Mm-mm. You can teach. That's part of the internship. You teach them what's funny.
That's nice.
They're going to be like, I don't understand this humor.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of people don't. And then they don't listen again, and that's okay. Did you know 23% of people listen to their audio podcasts on YouTube? 23. So we had to put them over there. Anyway, I'm doing it one by one, sort of day by day, about 5 a week.
Are you, quote, remastering them?
Yeah, remastering, exactly, Bill. I am touching a couple things up. That's true. I put the intro, the current intro, in for each one of those first 5 that I've done so far. That's enough of the details. You guys ready to get to the topic?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do
the it. Stages of an angler. Oak and Oscar is an American watch company that does things the right way, not the easy way, crafting mechanical timepieces that combine Swiss precision with American know-how. Oak and Oscar was founded in 2015, named after the owner's love of bourbon and his dog, Oscar. Their watches are built to withstand even the most adventurous fly angler. Our very own Austin Dando has been putting his Olmsted to the test since last year. Oak and Oscar is a watch company that loves fly fishing. Visit their website at oakandoscar.com/troutbitten. Mark your time on the water with Oak and Oscar. If you want to be an efficient and effective angler, you need to have your fly storage dialed in, ensuring that you have everything the fish might want to eat while also staying organized and focused. Fulling mill fly boxes are designed for just this purpose. With no frills, these boxes are built to work. With custom-made, durable polycarbonate shells, They're lined with dense, slotted foam that holds everything from streamers to tiny nymphs and dries. They feature strong magnetic closures that only open when you want them to. From their pocket box, which fits in your shirt pocket, to their tactical max, which holds 960 flies, Fooling Mill's range of 8 boxes has something for every angler. Grab yours at foolingmill.com or ask for them at your local dealer. Let's start with what we hear the most. I mentioned this in the intro, but you guys went on and on so long, now we probably forgot what it is, what it was. Stop it. Well, you've all heard this, right? First, you want to catch a fish. Then you want to catch a bunch of fish. Then you want to catch a big fish, then the toughest fish, and then you get back to just wanting to catch a fish again. Has everybody heard that?
Yep.
Repeated a few times.
Larry Dahlberg special.
Is that what it, Is that where it's from?
That's who I first heard it from. I don't know if he, I doubt he invented it. Everything's gets regurgitated, it seems like.
I don't know. Somebody had to sort of coin it. Somebody had to start that for the first time, write it down. Anyway, maybe it is Larry Dahlberg. That's your favorite fisherman. I remember that.
It is, yeah. He's pretty cool.
He might just be attributing something that everybody says to his favorite fisherman. It's cheap.
You're a hater.
That's okay. Larry will appreciate it.
All right, so is that true? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have another phase. We can talk through these.
Yeah.
But I guess the other phase, I think, is where, like, I get to a phase now where I want to, it's like where I want to catch fish. Like, I don't want to be around people. I don't want to be around and see another building. All I want to see is trees, leaves, and rocks and water.
Nice. I hear that. I think there are a lot of phases, and I think we can go back through them. I don't know. I think it's, like I said, a clever way to kind of sum things up. And I think everybody starts out just wanting to catch a fish. I just want to catch a fish. That makes sense. I mean, I saw my kids do that, go through that.
Yeah, I think it's...
And then real quickly, they wanted to catch a big one too. What are you going to say?
I think it's a building of confidence through all those phases. Like, if you have to have the confidence to in your ability to catch the fish that are there. And so you might start to fish a stream that has the most fish possible to catch in your area, your region. You may want to hone your tactics and get confidence in your presentation to the fish. I don't know. Let's say you're in double digits a day. You start to feel like you have confidence to catch fish on most days. Then you say, okay, well, what's my next step? How do I grow as an angler, right?
Sure. I think that growth is what keeps us going, all of us. And then how you grow or what you want to grow into is a very personal kind of decision.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of them except the toughest fish. Mm. Like, it's never just got me, right? To go out and try to go to a spring creek with a 30-foot leader with 7X tippet to catch a 10-inch wild brown trout on a dry fly. Hmm. But some people love doing that. I'd never had any interest whatsoever doing that.
You don't like making it harder on yourself?
Not. I feel like the streams I fish, right, most of them in their freestone character, they can be challenging at times, and that's fine, right? Mm. But like some of these chalk-like spring creeks with incredibly stealthy approaches, to me, that's what I think of when I think of challenging fish. I think every stream can have its own time when it's challenging, and that's fine. But to seek out a challenging situation, which to me usually are those very like, you know, stealthy approaching spring creeks with little current, that is something that's never got my blood going.
Maybe you just don't like that kind of location.
Yeah, it's just not my type of fishing, man.
So do you ever use tactics that you just think are tougher? You're like, well, I can catch them this way. How, you know, can I how can I make it harder for myself? You ever do that?
No, I'm kind of that, I want numbers, then the big ones come.
Do you realize most people would say that you, just by fishing a fly rod, you're making it harder for yourself?
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
I don't think that's true, but a lot of people think like, oh, I'm fishing a fly rod, so I'm making it more challenging. I'm doing the tougher thing.
Yeah, no, I can understand where some folks that are, you know, bait fishermen or whatever think that because it's more involved, but
true.
I think day in and day out, there's not even a comparison on how effective the fly rod is, right? We've gone over that.
Right. Trout and rivers.
Yeah. And then, you know, I am probably the least on here, like as far as trout bit members go, like that part of it, that like streamer fishing, for instance, like doesn't get me going either, right? Like,
yeah,
just because it's more challenging, like I just can easily look away from that and continue to nymph fish or dry fly fish or dry droppers. Kind of my main, mm-hmm. my main game. I do throw streamers when the water dictates it, but I don't just do it. And I don't know if that's because my fishing time has decreased some, right? So it's so valuable when I go out. I want to go out and very efficiently work the water and go after the numbers. And maybe that'll be a phase I stay in for a while until my kids are older. I don't know.
You're just stuck in the numbers phase, Matt. You haven't grown.
Got out of it. Yeah. I love fish. Okay. Whether they're 5 inches or 20, like I just love catching them. I love that. That never gets old to me. Sometimes I fish with my brother. My brother's like, dude, are you done catching fish? I'm like,
nope. Of course, I'm joking when I say you're stuck there, but there is some kind of, I think that sort of goes along with this idea that, you know, the catch fish, catch bunch of fish, catch big fish, yeah. catch the toughest fish. I feel like people say it as though there's a hierarchy to it. Like, oh, you get through it, then you'll grow into this, and then you'll become a better angler, and then you'll grow up a little bit, and then you'll want to fish the tough fish. I don't see it that yeah. way.
I think you have to experience, like Matt has experienced fishing on the East Coast and the West Coast, and so he's experienced a lot of different types of fishing, different conditions, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. I think anyone who's fished as long as Matt, you're gonna find the niches that you like, and I guess you have to be that well-rounded angler to experience all that stuff and then realize, okay, I like this part mm-hmm. of fly fishing the best, and so I'm going to put myself in the position to do that as much as I can because I enjoy that. And it's going to create, you know, a better experience for him on the water.
Good point.
Yeah. Maybe that's the final stage. Just knowing what you like.
Yeah. It's a great.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And not that there's a final stage, not, you know, but maybe that's a more experienced stage.
Yeah.
You come full circle.
Like you said, Della, you just want to go out and see rocks and trees and water and not anybody else. And that's why you're out there. Maybe that really is I should quit saying final stage. That's a good stage to be in. How about that?
It's so subjective and relative to the individual too, right?
Yeah.
So catching a fish isn't too subjective. That's going out and catching a fish. But catching a lot of fish, that might mean, you know, if you're like Dom, if you catch 5 fish, like, hey, I really caught it today.
I did it.
You know?
I hit that clicker 5 times. Yes.
And then if you catch a wild fish, that might be the toughest fish. You know, if you're fishing for stock trout, I just want to catch a wild fish.
Western PA fishing for stockies.
Yeah.
Stocky city.
So each stage can have its own validations, but they're all going to be different depending on what your goals are.
What's your favorite thing, Austin? Going out there and what?
I just like catching them. Kind of like Grob was saying. I mean, I don't really go out in search of hard conditions. If conditions are hard when I get there, that's fine. I have to deal with them. But just going out and fishing and working through water and trying different tactics until I find something that works and sticking with it. I'm not one that, like you do this, Dom, I know a lot, where, okay, they're really eating the egg. Now, what if I change my egg off and I go to something else, right? Are they going to eat that egg anymore? Or are they going to eat this other colored egg? For me, I'm just like, ooh, they're eating the egg. I'd rather just keep it on. And a little bit about that valuable fishing time is kind of going back to what Grope said too. If they're eating, I'm going to be all over it.
That's cool. I like the battle. I like a battle against some kind of elements. You know, Austin, when you and I were fishing in the wind the last 2 days there in Argentina.
Yeah.
I loved that. Worst wind I've ever fished in. Loved it.
No doubt.
And you loved it too.
I did, but I wouldn't want to do that every day.
No, certainly not. But I don't mind having, well, I wouldn't want that wind every day, but I like something to fight against. I remember walking in the woods with my grandfather when I was real young. Every time I'd go to his house, we'd walk through the woods, go out back, go through his garden, stuff like that. We would always go outside, almost no matter what.
Yeah.
I'm telling a simple story here, but that's where I learned. I remember just being out in the woods in high winds and going, this is neat. I don't usually do this, you know? And now he was a hunter. He was a turkey hunter, hunted bear and deer and everything else too, but mostly focused on turkeys. And he just loved it so much. And he would be scouting and out in the woods all the time. And I loved being out there with him. I don't know. I'm saying I feel like I took that from him, or learned to appreciate that from him. Like, you kind of look forward to those moments of almost violent weather. That was almost violent wind we were in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was up to 50 miles an hour that day.
Yeah. It's almost, it's not unnatural, but it's unusual. How about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
And so put me in a situation that's unusual, and I like it.
We may take that for granted, too, because of the amount that we get to fish. And the fact that we get to fish all winter long, we don't have closed seasons here where we live, that maybe that's something we gloss over without giving much thought, but you do. So that's cool.
Right now, I like the unpredictable. And
go ahead.
So I know that if I go to River X right now and I fish, whatever, 5 hours, I'm probably going to catch 20 to 30 fish. They're probably going to be 12 to 18 inches, maybe get a better one if I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I can do that kind of, I don't want to say spoils me, but the fact that it's so predictable most days is, I'm to the point now where it's kind of not quite as enjoyable. Mm. And so if I went to the same river every day and I caught 25 fish and I fished from, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., I fished the exact same tactics. I fished the exact same flies, and I did that for a decade. At some point, I'm to the point now where it's starting to get a little bit boring at times when I know it's predictable. And so for me, some of that is saying, okay, something needs to change. Some variable needs to change. And so this year, I've done way more exploring than I have in the last 2 years. Mostly for brook trout. We've had a lot of water this winter and into the early spring. And so just going to those streams now, because I know they have water, because I know if I try to do that in June or July, those streams are going to be miserable to fish because they'll be very, very dry. And so just doing something different out of the norm makes it exciting because I don't do that all the time.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. You mix in different tactics and things too, then.
Yeah. And then you're exploring the different types of water. The stream's only maybe 10 or 15 feet wide.
Yeah.
Your casting needs to be a little bit more, a lot more accurate. Your presentation, a lot of times with some of those fish, you get like one chance because they're so aggressive in some of these freestone streams that if you put a bad cast on, they're going to chase it. And so that's been more exciting over the last, let's say, 3 months for me than it has to go to a bigger river system.
Those brookies eating for you pretty well in the cold weather?
Yeah, at times.
Let's say 2 months ago, like in February?
Yeah, the coldest day I fished this year was like 19 degrees, and it was like 20, 30 mile an hour winds.
Brookie streams.
And so, but they have to have water. Like there's a, I don't know, they can't be frozen over or to the point where.
Right.
It's the same as like fishing bigger river systems. The more time you spend doing it, you get the little tricks that help you that you might, hey, maybe it caught me 3 extra fish today because I learned something.
I've never found those tricks, Bill. I mean, February, brookie streams, like north of here or back your way. Absolutely. I'll get like single digit, like 2 or 3 fish. I'll be like, ooh, not bad.
Yeah.
That's always been tough for me. I'd love to do better in February on those kind of streams.
It's pretty cool, Dale. I think this year I've been a little New Year's resolution for myself has been not to fish the same stretch of water twice.
No kidding.
So
like all year, that's going to be your goal all year?
Yeah.
No kidding. And you fish a lot.
I do. But there's so many different accesses.
Yeah.
Upstream from a bridge, downstream from a bridge, different rivers, tribs. And so, this goes back into the I like to catch numbers, but that's how I challenge myself, right? Is, every time you go to a different section of water, the bug, the emergence is different. It's could be further up river, or you can follow a hatch up river, or you're always getting into something different as opposed to going on that same stretch over and over again. So I think that's my way of just keeping myself challenged. We touched on the challenging thing, right? So that's always fresh, right? Because you never know. You don't have any, what did it fish like last week? What did it fish like the week before? I don't know. I'm going in blind.
You got to keep figuring it out.
Yeah, you got to keep figuring it out. And it makes you fish or think, outside the box a little bit. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that's my goal, right? During runoff, when there's only a handful of spots available to fish, may I fish the same area twice? Sure. Right. Mm-hmm. But like in general, that's going to be one of my, mm-hmm. one of my goals this year is to kind of spread out and not fish that same water twice.
I like that. I haven't done anything like that for a while. I was out on a piece of water today that I fished, you know, last week. And I could say that's often because I'm forced into, I had two and a half hours today. It was the eclipse today, gentlemen. Did you see the eclipse?
Yep.
The old letdown.
I think you caught a whiskey.
Did you? There you go.
Nice.
I didn't catch a whiskey, but fish kept eating right through the eclipse. I was like, that's cool. You caught a whiskey during the eclipse?
Yeah, I'll send you a
picture. That's cool.
Whiskey clip.
It was super cold out here. We didn't get the full, you guys got more of an eclipse than we did. Mm-hmm. But it got really cold. You know,
it definitely got colder.
And I stuck a whiskey.
I remember the first solar eclipse, of my lifetime was when I was in elementary school. I was in like third or fourth grade. And you know what is so strange? My elementary school teacher, I saw parked behind me today. I was right next to the road. He was up 400 or 500 yards. I don't know, just one of those full circle things. I was like, no kidding.
That's pretty cool.
Because I distinctly remember the day. Everybody's like, don't look at the sun. We made the cardboard box thing, you know, where you see
with
the shadow.
Reflector, mm-hmm. right? With the paper towel tube that goes back up.
Something like that.
So I'm the only one who thought that was way overblown.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
Not nearly as incredible as the news wanted you to think it was.
No, I mean, they got nothing else to talk about in the news, which is kind of a good thing.
It was just cloudy at my house. Although I did have an earthquake here, and none of the rest of you felt that.
Nah, I thought you were just making too big a deal out of your earthquake.
That was way cooler than the cloudy sky. Anyhow, this is a fishing podcast.
Well, we were catching fish during the eclipse, bud.
Kind of an eclipse. That's a nice fish group.
What? Did he send it?
Too bad it's a rainbow. It doesn't count.
Hey. Hey now. He said, hey. Wild trout, baby.
Come on, man. That's not even an eclipse.
Probably ran out of a lake and he snagged it.
Again.
That ain't a lake.
It's bright, sunny skies. Eclipse? No. Strike that.
That's not a name, or you could have named it Eclipse.
I'm said it's a partial during the partial eclipse.
Stalked rainbow. look at the tail on that thing. Come on, man.
The landscape is changing for trout anglers. No doubt you've already noticed another truck at your favorite access point and seen more anglers on the water. For those looking for new challenges and fishing opportunities, Trout Routes has the data to help you avoid the crowds and explore new public water. Trout Routes has mapped more than 50,000 trout streams across the country with curated, detailed maps of public land and access points. Trout Routes has developed integrated and interactive data, putting the tools in your hands to research new water and help you navigate in the wild to know exactly where you stand in the current. It's still up to you to find those deep pools and undercuts, but Trout Routes helps you get on the water, connecting you with resources like fly shops and stream gauges for trout water across the country. Download Trout Routes in the App Store today and visit troutroutes.com to learn more. For over a decade, Smith Creek has helped anglers just like you to free up your hands, hold your gear within easy reach, and keep our waters clean. Smith Creek's family of patented accessories are tested guide tough and backed by good old-fashioned customer service. Crafted from rugged materials like anodized marine-grade aluminum and UV-resistant nylon, Smith Creek products are hand-assembled with pride and built to last. To stay up to date on their latest specials and new product releases, be sure to follow Smith Creek on Instagram at SmithCreekNZ. Quality you can depend on from a brand you can trust. That's Smith Creek.
So we're kind of talking from, let's say, and this is fair, an experienced angler's perspective, right? We're like, well, we don't really have phases and stages. Here's what we like about it, and here's how we like to stay motivated and challenged because we have caught numbers. We have caught big fish. All right, we've all seen friends and family members that we've introduced to fly fishing. We've seen them go through stages, right? Do you think it's fair to say people first want to catch a fish, and then they probably want to start to think about, well, I'd like to catch more than that. Yeah. More than one, more than two, right?
Yeah.
There is kind of a natural order of things. Is that fair?
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
I would say the most dangerous phase is the big fish phase.
Right on. That's nice. That's a good point.
Because it's addicting. And at some point, that fish...
Dangerous.
Yeah. At some point, you know, trout don't naturally grow in our area much bigger than 20 inches. And if it is, it's extremely rare. And so to want that and to seek that out, I don't know. It is awesome and it is fun, but it can
sever friendships.
It can ruin you from, I don't know, just.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question that that takes people by storm. That phase is the most jealous phase. It's the most, it can be the most secretive phase. An exhausting phase, you know, you can spend hours upon hours, you know, exploring and looking at social media. And to be quite honest, I think it's the most obnoxious phase.
There you go.
Looking back on it, it's almost too much. It almost ruins the sport in a way. For me anyway, just like how much attention it draws. You know, and I don't think it would be the way it is if it wouldn't be for social media, because that to me like just puts, you know, sparks the fire even more, right? When people post stuff from, you know, states and other people comment, and it just turns into a big drama.
It does, right? Yeah. It's funny. This is one of the stages I feel like maybe I haven't like let myself go into. I've never been big fish chaser. If I catch a big fish, that's great. But, you know, I have plenty of friends who go down that rabbit hole. We all do.
You know, that's what the people that don't catch big fish say.
That's what I was going to I was going to take that shot.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean.
I'm sorry, Austin. You set me up.
He's in the bartender phase. He's in the bartender phase. Like, take me here.
He's like, I'm not trying to catch big fish. If I wanted to catch big fish, I could catch as many big fish as I wanted to. Right, Austin?
But I think it's glorified in the sense that, well, if I can go find a big fish, that means I'm really good at fishing. When it doesn't mean that.
Yeah.
I think I could go fish a really hard river, and if I caught a dozen fish out of that really difficult technical river, that'd be way more impressive to me, even if they're all dinks, than if I went and caught one big dumb fish somewhere that never seen a fly in its life.
Right.
And that gets to me where it's the arrogance and pride that gets grown out of it, where it's not necessarily warranted.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. I think that's one of the biggest, I don't know, grievances that 22 inch fish that came from underneath a feeder is more relevant than a 10 inch wild brown trout that, you know, you worked all day to get to. And I think that's the devil behind social media and just the worship of those big fish and just not understanding. And I think that's part of the growing and learning phase. Like, you have to be in it and you have to fish for many years to realize, like, oh, like when I saw that big fish, as a beginner, you're like, oh, I saw that big fish. I want to catch big fish because somebody does that. And so you need to learn the sport or the hobby and grow as an angler to understand the value to yourself and to other people that have been in the game for a long time of the value of the fish in a situation.
Nice. You guys have good words, good descriptions for especially that stage, if we're calling it that. Deli, you started out by saying it's dangerous, the most dangerous stage. I think the biggest danger is you burn yourself out and all this other negativity we're talking about with the big fish stage. You burn yourself out on that negativity too. And you're chasing something that's like a unicorn. It, a lot of times it doesn't even exist. Then you start cheating. Mm-hmm. And you go, trying to make it look bigger or trying to make it legitimate when it's not even, maybe like it is under a feeder. It did come from under a feeder or something.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, is it's just a dangerous phase. So get past it. Not like there's a phase above it that's better, but like, you know, okay, we all want to catch big fish. But then I guess what we're all suggesting, perhaps, and I don't want to speak for you guys, but is don't get too hung up on, hey, big fish is what it's all about. Definitely there's other things. We all love catching big fish, but if you focus on it too much, it'll kill you.
Well, so I think people that focus on that too, Dom, I find that the people that are consumed by it and that can't get over it and enjoy the 6-inch native brook trout catch, you know, on a bushy dry fly or whatnot, end up seeking different game fish or, get out of the trout phase at sure. all. We didn't, you know, I don't know if we put that, you know, we can talk about that, but that's a phase. Some people then go into warm water species or carp.
Sure.
And that's one thing from a trout, like for me, I've never gotten that itch, right? Like I'd rather
same
catch a 6-inch brookie, you know, as opposed to going and catching a muskie or a bass or, and there's nothing wrong with targeting those fish, but I've always been a true cold water trout bum. And that's what I love to do, right? I can't get into those other species, but some folks, they get to that point where they're like, I got to get, you know, what's next? You know,
well, a lot of times it's because the trout aren't big enough.
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes too, in fairness, maybe they're not plentiful enough in their area.
Sure.
Which makes sense. Then you're not going to chase them all the time.
I mean, you know, I probably do the most warm water fishing out of all of us here.
Sure.
And so some of it, like you said, is out of necessity. Like at some point in time, our rivers get too warm, our streams get too warm, and they're dewatered in our area. That
yours do. And so, in West
APA. And so bass fishing is awesome and fun in the summertime.
It is.
The musky stuff I've done in small, I don't know, burst. I spent 1 year doing it pretty consistently. It's something that I enjoy in small samples. And so like if you mix in everything, like trout, musky, bass, in like the different phases of trout, like all of that, I guess, just makes, you know, if I get tired of one species or get tired of one tactic, I can move to something else. And it like refreshes me, and then I come back, and then I refresh. And then I'm like, okay, I'm reset. Now let me go back, and now if I, you know, I haven't fished for trout in a couple weeks, and I go back and I fish, then I'm more passionate and I'm more motivated that day, and I might fish harder than I did. And so like cycling through all of those different kind of tactics and rivers and just makeups, I guess, just helps keep me refreshed. So that I don't get kind of dulled, because if I go out and do the same thing over and over again, I start to go through the motions and I get a little bit dulled.
Mm-hmm. I hear us all saying the word phases instead of stages. Stages to me does kind of seem like you're stepping up to this next thing. You're stepping up to whatever's after that. And here we're kind of talking, well, like you said, you'll go through a phase maybe every summer, Bill, of fishing, you know, warm water species. And I do that more and more because my boys like fishing for smallmouth and rivers more than trout. That's cool. I like fishing with my boys. So I've enjoyed that in the last few summers. And I've told you guys, I went through a long streamer phase, about a year long streamer phase. Dry flies. I started out like most people fishing dries. That was a 3 or 4 or 5 year phase. Night fishing phase. I don't know if I'm not out of any of those, right? But yeah, I went through periods in my fishing experience here of long periods of time focusing on one thing. Doesn't mean I excluded everything else, but I was most interested in the night fishing and then in the small stream stuff. And the neat thing, like you said earlier, Bill, is then you kind of have these experiences, these tactics, these places, these ways to fish under your belt. You can go back to it. And it does kind of refresh you to just have that to kind of renew your experience. And you might meet a new friend who's like really into small stream fishing. You go,
yeah,
okay, cool. Let's go do that. And then maybe, you know, then you have that bond with somebody because that's what they're into as well.
Bill said something cool, adding on to that about each one of those stages we initially brought up. Bill said something about having confidence. You know, you can do one, you build the confidence, do the next thing. Yeah. And I think when you get to that point, if you're confident that you can go out there and catch fish most of the time, then you're not going to feel like you're missing out on something when you go and choose to do a different phase. Like for me, for example, once the hatch season starts and the crowds start to come out of the woodwork, I know that if I'm not in the parking lot or my pull off the first thing in the morning, I'm probably not going to have that water to myself. And I don't want to have to deal with people. Mm-hmm. So I may start to shift my phase to saying, well, I'm going to go to the small streams. Yes, I may be missing out on some great fishing activity, but I know I could probably enjoy that there, and I know I can go enjoy this over here too. So I'm not going to feel like I'm losing by choosing something else.
That's a good point. I went through a phase where I felt like I needed to be on the best rivers at the best times because I felt like I was missing out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I need to put myself in that position to.
Yes, I hate that.
You know, I felt like that was what I felt like should be the most successful time. And like you said, it years after years, it brought more frustration because I didn't get to move around. I didn't get to fish like the amount of water I wanted to. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of learn and say, okay, I'm going to migrate to less popular streams. They have less fish. They have, you know, smaller fish, but it's a more enjoyable experience.
Yeah. And you stop comparing yourself to other people too. That's another stage. Oof. I feel like I've kind of gotten into where I don't look at social media and think, oh, I wish I could be doing what that person's doing, or, you know, I wish I could fish more than, or fish as much as he does or she does. I don't really think about fishing that way anymore. I think about it as more individual of what my life allows and the fishing friends that I have. And then any time outside of that I can gain or add to, that's great. But I'm trying never to compare my success or my enjoyment to others.
You're so advanced.
It just makes life easier.
It does. It is great.
The one other phase I would say is learning your river phase. And I guess I've done this with multiple rivers where you fish it.
That's cool.
You know, you let's say, okay, I want to learn this river system and I fish it, I don't know, let's say 50 times a year. And I fish it at all times of all different water levels, temperatures, you know, or, you know, January to December, you're fishing that river and you're learning it and learning the bugs, learning the fish behavior and where they migrate to certain times of year. I'm saying 50 times, but that's probably not adequate in some of the bigger river systems, right? You could spend hundreds of days because everything's evolving and changing all the time is just learning a river system.
And all the tribs, like you said. Yeah. That's neat. Bill, have you fished like from the mouth of the river up to the headwaters?
I have in some of the bigger ones. Yeah, I have. I've never, like, I know you talked about methodically saying, okay, let me fish mile one to mile two and then, you know, progress my way down through it. Over the years I've fished it, and I would say I've done that with probably like five rivers at this point at least. Mm-hmm. Now I'm kind of a little bit like Grobe in that I know what I like, and so I won't fish the water types that I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Back to what Del was saying, though, about phases, it's interesting because I feel like I've gone through all the phases we've talked about, right? And now I'm full circle back to a phase where I'm fishing my local water. Like Deli was talking about how he, you know, we all have that fear of missing out on the major rivers when the hatches are going, right? And then we may get disappointed. But I've also gone back to the phase where I'm like, yeah, my local waters are pretty awesome. And I know what to expect, right? I know I'm going to see a few people. But I've also spent, you know, lots of money exploring these far-reaching tributaries and, you know, hiked miles upon miles up these places where it's now I'm back to the phase of, yeah, I just want to drive down the street, you know, 5 minutes from my house and fish local. And I'm kind of in that phase where I gotta admit I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, again, your time is often short, you know, having a family and everything. And man, you have that luxury of some of the best trout waters in the world right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and you know them more intimately than arguably 95, maybe more than that, percent of the people that step into those waters.
Yeah. You're in the same boat, right? You ever get to the point where you're like, you know, I'm cool going down the street.
Oh, right? Yeah. Like I said, where I fished today, I fished there last week, but my gosh, people come from all over the world to fish right there.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah,
you know,
it's all good.
Whether it's after a fishing trip or at a backyard fire, you can bet the Trout Bitten crew has a case of New Trail Broken Heels along with us. It's honestly our favorite beer. This hazy IPA is smooth and full-bodied. Hand-selected citra hops lead to notes of bright clementine and juicy ruby red grapefruit. Broken Heels is a keeper. New Trail Beer is proudly brewed in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and delivered cold to your favorite craft beer retailer every week. At New Trail, it's not about being the best angler. It's about getting out there. So enjoy nature's moments and reward yourself for a day well fished with New Trail Broken Heels. It's Trout Bitten's favorite beer. Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure.
We're able to talk about this because of the, you know, the amount of time we spend on the water and how much we love doing this, right? You know,
yeah,
it's part of who we are. And I think we're going to get into it now with why people get stuck not ever getting past a few of these phases. And,
right.
And part of it, I think, is just people never, you know, grasp the truly fall in love with the hobby, right? Like, I think there's only a percentage of individuals that end up falling in love with it. And then, you know, you take off, right? The lifelong learning with fly fishing. But I think that's a small percentage.
It is.
Of people.
I think a lot of people get into fly fishing for trout and they kind of expect that they're going to fall in love with it, but then it doesn't necessarily work out that way. So again, we're talking from the perspective of experienced anglers. That's true. But maybe it's more accurate to think of anglers in the stage of beginner and advanced and then whatever might be in between, intermediate, whatever. And as much as I hate the idea that there are experts, as much as we all acknowledge that elitism in fly fishing sucks, it's also fair to admit that beginners are in a very different part of the game than experienced anglers. And I feel like too many beginners get stuck there. And like you're starting to talk about, Matt, like why do people get stuck there? You know what I mean? How many friends have you introduced to fishing? Friends, family members, whoever. And you show them a lot of things and they buy a bunch of gear. And they're ready to go. And they I think they expect to fall in love with it. This is going to be my identity for the rest of my life. It just doesn't work out for them because they don't develop the necessary skills maybe to catch fish regularly. Why is it?
I think it's funny you say that because I see it, you know, and I'm into a bunch of different outdoor recreation sports. But it's not just fishing. It's mountain biking. It's skiing. It's hiking. It's hunting. Mm. I think it's people. People just aren't, you know, built, you know, to be that committed to want to learn. I think it's just a lot of people are okay, you know, getting out there, right?
And that's a good perspective.
And I think, you know, a lot of the sport is that. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying like you know people that golf, that suck at golf. And they go golfing eight times a year.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens with fishing. Like I see it across all spectrums. And then there's the people that are serious about it, right? And that's everything. They're serious skiers and they're serious fly fishermen. And it's a smaller percentage of individuals from what I've seen and learned.
You always get out of it what you put into it with anything in life. And I think some people get excited about something new, you know, new stage or hobby they have. And they get excited on the gear and they get excited on collecting the things. And then they finally go out there. Maybe it's not as, doesn't come as quickly as they hope. And they don't have that true hunger and fire to go back and learn and do better. It kind of maybe leaves them with a disappointment to the point where, well, if that wasn't easy success, maybe that's not my thing. You know, I didn't have fun last time. I'm probably not going to have fun again. It was too hard. But you have to have the fire in you that even when you don't catch something, you still want to go back even worse.
Mm-hmm. I think you've got to understand like any hobby or anything that you get into, the details matter tremendously. And so I think the first beginning part of fly fishing for me was learning what details matter. When everyone first gets into it, they're all obsessed with what are the flies, the flies.
Tell me what flies
are they eating?
Life stages.
And so like the longer you're in it, you realize that
a clean drift.
That's what matters. The clean drift, like in the end of the day, what matters. And if you're getting into the sport, try to understand what the details are that really matter.
I think people aren't ready for those kind of details, you know?
There's so much muddiness.
Yeah. You could probably ask 10 different anglers and they would give you 10 different, like, top fives.
Yeah, definitely.
That's true, too.
Yep.
It's too much work.
Yeah, it is. And again, people aren't ready for the details. People aren't ready for the work, necessarily, right?
We earn it.
Well, I mean, what are my problems? Go ahead, please.
Nothing. Right? I just mean we put the time in to learn more, to read books, you know, to contemplate different tactics. Why didn't we ask questions? Our brains are wired in a certain way that is going to allow us to have success, right? But we want the success because we have failure. We constantly are failing out there, right? Like,
definitely. You know,
but we always are looking for solutions to the problem. And I don't think people get that engaged. And Dom, you know, it's just that passion. People don't have the passion, you know, to want to learn. And so, you know, they're going to continue to get the results that their hard work gets them, right? Which is the beginner phase in a lot of people's angler careers.
Sure. You're right, though. It's just in every walk of life. I think I make the mistake of thinking that maybe fishing is more like that. Maybe more beginners get stuck in that beginner stage, but that's probably not true, is it?
Not from what I've seen. I mean, I've seen people get stuck in the mountain bike phase or the skiing phase where they're on, you know, just groomers and that's too hard for me. Mm. Yeah, well, you know, you should ski it. You want to ski that stuff, you got to work hard. So it's a lot of
the other thing I spent a lot of my life doing was playing guitar.
Right on.
And in playing saxophone too. But for sure, most people will not put the time in that it takes just to even build up good guitar calluses. I mean, finger calluses, you know.
Yeah.
And mine are gone now, but yours are stronger than ever, Austin, because you stick with it. And I did it for 16 years as a career. I got a little burned out. That's why my calluses are gone. Yeah, I mean, it does. It takes, that took work too, to get there.
And I think there has to be some enjoyment in that work too.
Right,
it was miserable the whole time, and you thought, well, maybe at some point this won't be miserable anymore. There's no way you're going to want to go pick up that guitar.
Yeah.
You have to enjoy fumbling through and realizing small victories and small improvements over time. That's what gets me, is when you can do something a little more challenging than you could do last month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's pretty neat. Over time, maybe it felt slow, but now I have this tangible skill.
That's right. I told Spencer Durant when I was on his podcast a couple weeks ago that the first fish I caught on a dry fly, not the first, but the first one I really worked for, you know, I was about 17, about 19, maybe 20 years old. It took me about 10 days. I think it's 10 days of fishing after work to catch one fish. I'm sure I accidentally caught it, but I felt like I finally did something. And I mean it. I think I was probably crying a couple of those nights. Being that old, you know, almost 20 years old.
So mad.
I think I probably
cried. So much frustration and anger at that age. At least for me, it was.
Right?
Like, I just want it. Right? Like, just eat the damn thing.
Eat the... What else can I do? There were 1,000 things I could do. I had no idea what they were, but I knew that I wanted to know the answers.
And there you go.
You have to be willing to suck for a while, but not accepting of sucking.
Yeah,
and I do think the learning curve is probably the lowest gradient that it ever has been.
Like, it's shortened.
It's been shortened.
That's
true. Like, the amount of information that's available on the internet for free versus, like, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there was so much more that you had to get lucky to find somebody that would show you the ropes. Or you would read a book and, you know, be able to interpret that book as far as how it applies to your river system. And so where now you have millions of videos telling you and often showing you exactly where to go and all of this information.
Guidebooks more than ever, everything. Good point.
And so I think that's probably what's brought more people into the industry, is just that learning curve has decreased.
And then you can have some success quicker than ever. And then I think you're almost spoiled and you go, okay, good. Kind of got it. But then you don't have much of anything. And then I think still you get stalled out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Right? We don't want anybody to get stalled out. What we're saying is you got to work for it.
So actually what was funny is the day I was fishing with Anthony and you were driving by, he had one of the best questions I've heard. And he said, like, you know, he's been putting the time in and he's fishing 2 or 3 days a week now. And so he's saying, like, okay, his question was, how important are the reps? You know, let's say you fish, if you don't fish for 2 weeks or 3 weeks in between, you know, you can say, hey, I fly fish for 40 years. But if you fly fish for 40 years once a month, the guy that's fished for 2 years and has fished 3 or 4 days a week is going to, it spends a lot of time on a river. In that initial learning phase, like, those reps, I think, matter a lot. Like, that's what's going to get you from the beginner of fishing once a weekend for 3 years or 2 years. And if you, you know, let's say you fish 20 hours a week, and I even see it in myself. If I miss and I don't fish for a week or 2 weeks, like, I'm a little rusty to start with. And so, like,
I hear you.
Yeah. You have to, I guess, in that initial phase, you have to be willing to put in the time to really get the reps in, to really go from, like, I don't know, beginner angler to, I don't know, we'll say intermediate angler.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Do you guys think, along with the reps, it's, I always think that fly fishing is a little bit like riding a bike and or skiing, where it's always harder to learn the older you get. And I'm not saying super old, but I think, like, you pick up the sport in your mid 40s or, you know, early 50s. And it's just something about reading water, right? And walking on the bank, and you almost miss that. And that is the same with anything you do, right? Yes. Any sport you do, it's harder to pick up the older you get. And I think that's true in regards to fishing too.
Yeah. But I will often have people when I'm guiding, and they'll say, well, I retired. And I always said when I retired, I was going to get into fly fishing. And I'm like, you waited too long. I don't say that to people outright, but I'm thinking it. You waited too long. You're not going to, you don't have nearly the time to learn much of anything. And it's going to be harder to wade, and all the stuff that it requires physically. And then it's just tough. They put themselves kind of behind the eight ball by not getting into it a little bit sooner. If you have any inclination, you're out there and you're 30 years old, get in, you know, start getting out on a river, like Bill's saying, like 20 hours a week. Don't have kids either. It'll slow you down.
Right? Words of encouragement.
Keep it in your pants, kids.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's right. 110 times. All right. Anything else, guys?
No.
And on that bombshell.
Quick goofing around. Come on, Austin. You always have something. Something to bring us back home. Bringing it all back home.
Hey now, great album.
Bob Dylan once said,
Johnny's in the basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement. Think about the government. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. There it is. So the stages of an angler are not set. Don't let anyone tell you there's a path you must follow or an essential order of things. Find your own path and do what you want to do out there. Each of us finds interest and inspiration from different parts of the game, whether that's about exploring new locations or counting the tails on a mayfly and matching them to precision. These particulars, these interests, are what keep us coming back to the water. The more time you spend on a river, the better you'll learn the habits of trout. And by putting in the reps, with frequent trips in all conditions, you'll move past the beginner stage into something else. Eventually, you might stop thinking about much of anything, and you'll just be fishing. So, catch a fish? Sure, that's the first goal. Catching more than one and catching big ones are great motivators, and meeting the challenge of some of the toughest, most selective trout around is another goal to chase too. Ultimately, every long-term angler finds what they love most about the woods, the water, and the trout. So we slip in and out of these stages and interests, unconfined and unrestrained by what anyone else thinks we should be doing out there. We're just fishing. All right, my friend Matt Grobe, will you read us out?
Yeah, baby. Remember, the Trout Bitten Project is a free resource for all anglers.
Everyone.
The Trout Bitten website hosts over 1,000 articles with endless stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and tags too. Be sure to find the Trout Bitten YouTube channel, now featuring the Trout Bitten Tip Series, the Fish and Film Series, and the Trout Bitten Fly Box, all in collaboration with Wilds Media. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a comment, because that really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
Ready? I'm going to crack my broken heels right now.
Hey, oh, now. That got splashed. Got splashed on that one. I shook that one up.
No, you didn't.
That's pretty good.
You know, that's what the people that don't catch big fish say. I don't just do it.
Bill said something cool.
And then you'll grow up a little bit. Yeah, I hit that clicker 5 times. Yes.
I just like catching them.
Eclipse, no.
Too bad it's a rainbow. It doesn't count.
Hey. Hey now. Hey. It's a wild trout, baby.
That's not even an eclipse.
That ain't a lake.
Come on, man.
Yeah, way to go, idiot.